Brishut Rav Maradatra, Brishut Rabbanim Avchubadim, Brishut Kahal Rabotai Gurotai. Once during the spring and again in the summer, the Jews of Bavel would leave their homes to hear Rabbah Bar Nachmani lecture on the laws of the Chagim that would soon come. He was a popular speaker, attracting on average 12,000 listeners who would journey to the great Metifta in Pumbedita each year. When the Babylonian tax officials came for their monthly collections, they would find no one home and the required funds went unpaid. Eventually, the Babylonian authorities were informed that Rabbah Bar Nachmani was costing them tax revenue. They sent a Priestika de Malka, a royal agent, to arrest him. Rabbah Bar Nachmani went on the run until he was eventually cornered in an inn. The Gemara in Baba Metzia recounts that at this time there was a machloket in the Metifta Derkia, the heavenly yeshiva, where God and his celestial minions debate Torah law. The subject? The parasha that we read this week, Tazria. The Torah teaches that an infected patch of skin of the proper sort for tzara'at becomes tamei if the hair growing in the area turned white after the baharet, after the spot appeared. If the hair turned white and then the spot appeared, the person remains tahor. The heavenly debate centered around doubtful situations. When the order of the appearance of the Baharet and the Seir Levan cannot be known, Kuhu Metifta Dirkia, the entire heavenly yeshiva, maintained Tamei. On the other side was one lone opinion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. Man Nochach, it was asked. Who shall decide? The great expert in the laws of Tzara'at was Rabbah Bar Nachmani, the Malach HaMavet, God's emissary of death, was sent to the inn to bring him, but he wasn't able to approach the great sage because he was absorbed completely in his learning. But when the wind rustled through the trees, Rabbah Bar Nachmani's concentration was broken and the angel of death stepped forward to complete his mission. As he lay dying, the sages tell us, he issued his ruling for the celestial yeshiva. Amar, tahor, tahor. He died with these words on his lips. It is pure. It is pure. Yatsat bat kol v'amra, ashrecha Rabbah Bar Nachmani, shigufcha tahor, v'yatsa nishmatcha b'tahor. A celestial voice was heard to say, fortunate are you, Rabbah Bar Nachmani, that your body is pure, and your soul departed with the word pure on your lips. I struggle over this Gemara as images of the library where I sat for my entrance interviews with the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz Harav 37 years ago float through my memory. Maran Harav Tzvi Yehuda Kohen Cook, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Libracha, sat so serenely over a cup of tea after morning prayers. I remember to this day the questions that plagued me in the moments before I screwed up my courage and entered the library. Was my hair short enough? Was my Hebrew good enough? Were my tzitzit long enough? The Rosh Yeshiva would only ask if my soul was pure enough. Just days ago, the blood of teenage boys streaked the library floor. The world calls them seminarians, as if they were stern men in cassocks living austere lives. We know that they were boys, brothers, sons, grandsons, whose lives sparkled like stars in the sky. I struggle over this Gemara because I wonder if we dare say about these children, Ashreichem shiyatzun nishmoteichem b'Torah. Are they fortunate that their young and nearly untried souls expired in the purity of a place of Torah? Are their parents and their siblings and their family and their friends fortunate to be witnesses to their martyrdom? So I do what we've been taught to do when we struggle with a text. Sit and study it some more. My eyes follow a small letter bet in the Gemara to a reference in the Rambam. It's there that I find the beginning of an answer. In Hilchot Tumat Zara'at, in Perek Beit Halachatet, Safek Seyar Levan Kadam, Safek HaBaheret Kadma, Harezo Tameh. The Rambam sets aside Rabba Bar Nachmani's decision. When we are in doubt as to what came first, the white hair or the spot on the skin, the Rambam rules that the afflicted is ritually impure, mita'am safek. Why? The entire thrust of the Talmudic discussion is the authority of Rabba Bar Nachmani in this realm of law. Even the denizens of the heavenly Metista turn to him for an answer. And what does he say? Tahor, tahor, pure, pure. But the Rambam still says Tameh. I turn to the Rambam squires, the sages who bear his armor into Milchanta Shel Torah, lead among them the Kesef Mishnah, the commentary on the Rambam's Mishnah Torah written by the Shulchan Aruch. The Metifta Derkia, he explains, cannot rule in a matter of law, because lo bashamayimi, Jewish law is not the province of angels and celestial beings, but rather the sacred work of mortal Jews, Torah scholars. I'm still puzzled. The Metifta Derkia turned to Rabba Bar Nachmani, a great sage, but a man of this earth. Manocha, who should decide if not Rabba Bar Nachmani, the Yachid B'Nigaim, that single lone expert in the Halachot of Tzara'at, acknowledged even in the heavens, but firmly of this earth. The precious words of the Kesef Mishnah. Yesh Lomar, Dekevan D'Bishat Yitziat Neshama Hu D'Amar Hachi. Rabba Bar Nachmani issued his ruling at the moment that his soul departed his body, making him a member of the celestial yeshiva. What changed for Rabba Bar Nachmani b'shat yitziyat haneshama? He lost the status of being mortal. To be human is to live in perpetual uncertainty. Life is precarious, fragile, and subject to assault from an infinite number of threats. Our experience of the world is contextual, limited to the place and time in which we exist. All empirical knowledge is marginal, unessential, and contingent. We derive our knowledge of the world from a continual process of induction, far more impoverished than we can allow ourselves to believe. When one has only seen white swans, one concludes that all swans are white. But when a black swan is discovered floating on a faraway lake, we realize the human reason is fallible. Only one who can transcend time and place, who can exist outside the bonds of human fallibility, can speak with such certainty that even the Metifta Derkia must agree. Such certainty is by nature not of our world. It has no standing in the Metifta of mortals. The clarity of vision that Rabba Bar Nachmani experienced at the moment of his death does not figure in the debate here, Yeshiva Shamata. After Matan Torah, prophecy no longer sits at the study hall table. This is the dilemma of our existence as Jews. Our lives are built on prophetic command, but we can rely on the divine only so far. After that point, we are left to struggle with our mortal, if divinely given spirit, to study that command. For lo bashamayim hi. Sometimes when we sit in great assemblies, and with the passage of time, we can infer momentous truths about the meaning of our lives. It was in such a great assembly, after the passage of much time, that the sages could conclude, Mipnei chatayinu galinu me'artzeinu, that failures of leadership and of communal discipline created conditions that contributed to our loss of national sovereignty. We can draw no such conclusions this evening about the murder of innocents in the city of peace. We can only deal with the immediate empirical facts as they have been established through observation. 15-year-olds Neria Cohen and Segev Peniel Avichayo were shot and killed by a Palestinian Arab who lived in Jerusalem but refused Israeli citizenship. 16-year-olds Abraham David Moses and Yehonatan Yitzhak Eldar were shot and killed by a Palestinian Arab who refused Israeli citizenship but carried a Tehudat Zehut that allowed him to move freely throughout the country. 18-year-olds Roi Roth, Yochai Lipschitz, and Yonatan Chaim Hirschfeld were shot and killed by a Palestinian Arab who moved through Kiryat Moshe unchallenged and entered their yeshiva as easily as they did. 26-year-old Doron Mareta, a heroic figure who would not be denied Moreshet Yilat Yaakov, was shot and killed by a Palestinian Arab who could walk purposefully into a Jerusalem yeshiva armed with a rifle and rounds of ammunition. All we can know are facts like these and the palpable, painful emotions that beset us. We are not endowed with prophetic vision, and to propose a metaphysical cause of the deaths of these innocents not only unfairly absolves the murderer of his complete responsibility for his own acts, but is itself an act of religious hubris that claims prophetic vision where none pertains. Does our humanity then condemn us to moral relativism? If we can assert no universal propositions, how can we condemn the murder of children? We cannot place the murder of these innocents within the broad scope of Jewish history because we have no vision yet born of time. And that is good, for the wounds in the national psyche are still too raw. And even more so, to do so would be to rob them of their status as sons, brothers, grandsons, friends, and Talmidim. To make them the instruments of a calculated policy, calculus of policy, cost, and benefit itself leads to moral relativism. For now, we must simply mourn them as Jewish children, and the murder of innocent Jewish children can be nothing more than pure evil. Avelut, however, is an act of faith in the redemptive quality of caring. It is located in the love of children for parents and sadly of parents for children. For our Avelut to be redemptive, it must prompt the resolve to better ourselves. In this regard, the death of these innocents summons us to care more deeply about Jewish children, to protect them, to guarantee their secure and happy future, not only in Eretz Yisrael, but b'chol makom shehem. That is a response born of this world. What I remember most about Yeshivat Merkaz Harav are the voices in the Beit HaMidrash late at night. I can remember falling asleep to the Song of Torah, an ancient melody I sometimes sing to myself when I learn alone in Teaneck, when everyone in the house is asleep. That melody has always comforted me. I sit alone, but am linked to other places and other times in the eternal Song of Torah. Merkaz Harav will never become a symbol for victimhood and tragedy, just as Jews will never locate their ontology in their own suffering. The Yeshiva Shalmala has absorbed, tragically, 8 new registrants well in advance of their anticipated matriculation. Yehi Zichron Baruch.
We perceive Avelus as a very personal experience. As Rabbanim, one of our tasks is to frequent the houses of Avelim. And those who attend to come and comfort the mourners are always family and friends of the deceased or of the Avelim themselves. And they're the ones who bring them comfort. That's a personal Avelus. There's a different type of avelus that I know that I and my colleagues, and especially Rabbi Reichman will speak in a few moments, have experienced in our lives. It was 5.5 years ago, November of 2002, there was another horrific terrorist attack. There were 13 soldiers and civilians killed in Hebron on the Tzir HaMetpalalim between Kiryat Arba and Hebron, killed on a Friday night. And I and 3 or 4 others from the shul flew there. We flew to Israel. We came in Wednesday night and left Thursday night. It was for 30 hours. We visited half of the Avelim, the homes of the Avelim, and we visited some of the wounded in the hospitals as well. And you wonder, walking in, what type of reception will you receive? Because you're unknown. You don't know the deceased. You don't know the family. Why are you there even? And part of you wonders, why are you there? How are they going to look at you? Are you really sharing their suffering? And I found then, and we'll hear Rabbi Reichman's experiences in a moment, that there's a different type of avelus at play when such an event happens. The victim is not just a Jew, a brother, a son, a husband. It's not just a personal avelus, it's a national avelus. And it's at those times when the sense of family that exists amongst Klal Yisrael is most pronounced, and even strangers are brothers, and everyone is welcome, and no one questions why you're there, because you're there to grieve with the victims, because you yourself are one of the victims also, and you yourself have lost a member of the family. Rabbi Reichman went this year, I know a number of my colleagues went as well, to be Menachem Avol, the families of the 8 victims of the massacre at Merkaz Harav. And the stories that he has of recovery, of faith, of strength that infuses, that permeates these families, not only gives us our own sense of consolation and a comfort for the future, but it gives us also an insight into the power and majesty of Jewish life that sustains all Klal Yisrael, even through the most difficult times that we can fathom. Rabbi Zev Reichman is the Mardasra of the East Hill Synagogue in Englewood, my distinguished colleague, and it's a great chus for me to invite him to share a few words on this topic, B'mechitzasam Shel Kedoshim, a first-hand report of Emun and Chizuk from the Shiva homes of the Eight Talmidim of Merkaz Rabbi Reichman.
Thank you to the Mara D'Astra and to the RCBC for this evening. It's well known that in the circles of Chassidim, saying stories, relating stories, Sipurei Tzadikim about Tzadikim is a very important endeavor. In fact, it's related that the Baal Shem Tov said that to say Sipurei Tzadikim is like to learn Ma'aseh Merkava. It's akin to the study of the most esoteric and deep elements of our tradition. And the reason for that is on several levels. On one level, the learning of Ma'aseh Merkava, the learning of Malachim, and the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world are the lessons of Emunah. And when we hear about Tzadikim and their Avodas Hashem and their Mesirus Nefesh and their Kedusha, a person is inspired with Emunah. But even more so, the levels of Ma'aseh Merkava are really levels that are beyond a person. In the Sarim, they discuss Oros Pnimiyim and Oros Makifin, elements of understanding that a person comprehends, that's an Or Pnimi, an inner light. And then there's an Or Makif, a light that surrounds a person, a Kedusha that's so great that the mind is not the vessel to comprehend it. The mind can't understand it. It's beyond the person and it envelops the person with a light that's beyond him. Like a talis around a person, like a chuppah around a chasn and a kala, like a sukkah. It's an or, it's a light that's beyond the person. A person is cognizant of it, and he feels it, and he's changed by it, but it's a level that's way beyond him, way above him. Ma'aseh Merkava, the limud of Pnimius HaTorah, is a limud, it's a learning of Oros Makifin, of lights that are so great that the mind and logic doesn't comprehend it. It's Sistrei Torah, the contradictions of Torah. What a person does have is a person senses it, a person feels the presence of that which is truly transcendent. And I can say that the 40 hours that I spent in Eretz Yisrael visiting the eight families, the eight Shiva homes, visiting one of the victims who was in the hospital, and then hearing Hespedim about the Kedoshim on Thursday night was really an asek in Ma'aseh Merkava, in each sense, both in terms of the unbelievable faith, the unbelievable emunah that so many families exhibited, and also the sense that the levels that were being lived were levels that are way beyond what we usually come into contact with. And when we see such levels, it is awesome to be in the presence of such great Kedusha. On Thursday night, at the end of the Shiva, there were a series of Hespedim. There were Hespedim given at Yeshiva Tzirim in the high school where five of the Kedoshim were current students and one was a recent alumnus. Then there were Hespedim at Yeshiva Merkaz Harav, and then there were Hespedim at the same time at Yeshiva HaKotel, because one of the Kedoshim, Yochai Lifshitz Hashem Yikom Damo, was the son of Rav Tuvia Lifshitz, the Mashkiach of Yeshiva HaKotel. On Thursday night I went to Yeshiva Tzirim and afterwards to Yeshiva HaKotel. And Rav Katz, who who was the Rosh Kollel of Yeshivat HaKotel and a Rebbe of Rav Lifshitz spoke. And Rav Katz began by saying that we have to realize Haruge Malchus, Kedoshe Elyon, sacred individuals, are on a level that is far beyond our level. When people gather to talk about Kedoshim, to relive the lessons of Kedoshim, the neshama of that giant is with us in the room. The neshama of Yochai, he said, is with us in the room. But it's no longer occupying a body. It's now at an entirely different place, at a level of just soul. And it looks at the world in a different way. And it looks at people in a different way. And the Torah that it learns is a different type of Torah. And he said that his remarks were going to be an attempt to convey that type of Torah. The Torah that's an inner Torah, a very, very, very deep spiritual Torah. He said nothing happens by chance. It's not by chance, unfortunately, that these Kedoshim gave their lives during Parshas Vayikra, the Parsha of Karbanos, of sacrifices. When we read of Parsha Zachar, when we read of the war against Amalek. And he opened up the Chumash, and he said, let's read a pasuk in Chumash. Zachar es asher asal lecha Amalek, remember what Amalek did to you. Asher karcha baderech. And Rashi comments on that word, asher karcha baderech, that there are three meanings to it. Milashon mikre, happenstance. Milashon krivus, a terminology of cooling down. And milashon tuma, of defiling, of making impure. And Rav Katz suggested that those three interpretations are really one. Amalek comes against the Jewish people and says that what happens is a mikre, it's just a happenstance, it happened to be. It cools our religious ardor, and that's the tumah, that's the impurity. And then he opened the Rambam in Hilchos Tanis. Similar Rambam exists in Hilchos Avel, where the Rambam says that when there is a tragedy that is visited upon the Jewish people, mitzvah lizog ulahariyah, there's a mitzvah to call out, to cry, to mourn, and to change, to do tshuva. Because if we don't change, the Rambam says, if we say it was only a mikre, it just happened to be, we can go on with our lives, then terrible, terrible tragedies might be coming next. And what the Rambam is saying, Rabbi Katz suggested, is that we don't know exactly who is Amalek in a halachic sense today. But in a spiritual sense, that attitude of mikre, going on with our lives, of not changing, that is Amalek. And fighting Amalek requires of us lizok ulahariya, to do tshuva, to change, to become a different person, to learn lessons, to learn and to exemplify religious lessons. The Soloveitchik Zatzal, my father's Rebbe, writes many times that man cannot find the answer to the question of why evil occurs. It's the wrong question. The question has to be, what do we do now that evil has occurred? How do we change now that evil has occurred? That's what Rav Katz was teaching. What are we going to do different? What cheshbon ha-nefesh, what tshuva are we going to do? And Rav Katz then made the following point. On Yom Kippur, in Musaf, we talk of the Avoda, and to some degree it's a recreation of the Avoda. We talk of the Kohen Gadol going Lifnai V'Lifnin, and then the way he would come out finally after all those dangerous moments, and Mara Kohen, the face of the Kohen, like the rainbow, like the angels, and it's a moment of such spiritual height, and after that, we talk of an even higher spiritual level, the level of Asara Haruge Malchus. After Lifnai V'Lifnin, after the Avoda, There is the level of those who gave their lives, immersed in learning, killed by the enemies of the Jewish people. And we talk of them as having died, having given their lives, al kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Katz asked, it almost seems that it's a chilul Hashem. People would say, zo Torah, zo schara, this is Torah, this is its reward. It's a desecration, seemingly, of God's glory. And yet we say that the death of the passing of great giants is a passing al kiddush Hashem. And the way I understood his answer is that it's up to us to determine whether the passing will be a kiddush Hashem. If we internalize the lessons of kedoshim, if what happened transforms our religious behavior, that we are living on a higher religious plane, then their passing created kiddush Hashem. Heaven forbid. It's possible that we ignore what happened, or we say terrible things about the Ribono Shel Olam, Chas V'Shalom, and then it becomes a chilul Hashem because of the way we behaved. So I want to share a couple of stories that I experienced and learned, and hopefully these stories of tzaddikim, these oros makifim, these lights of malachim, of srafim, of chayos hakodesh, of ma'as and merkava, will inspire all of us to be transformed in a religious sense. I arrived in Eretz Yisrael on Wednesday morning, and I was picked up by someone who volunteered to take me around to all the homes. First we went to Ashdod, to the home of the Tournoach family, Doron Maharta Tournoach's home. Doron Maharta was 26 years old, the oldest of the Kedoshim. He was the eighth child of a family of 10 children, an Ethiopian family that came to Eretz Yisrael in 1991 in Operation Solomon. His father was a very respected member of the Ethiopian community in Ethiopia. He was the peacemaker of the village. When there would be fights within the village, he used to make the compromises and bring about peace. In fact, relatively in Ethiopia, they were wealthy. And he came to Eretz Yisrael not to escape poverty, but out of a desire to be in Eretz Yisrael, to be part of the state. Doron was the eighth son, the eighth child. Had learned at Yeshivat Kfar Roeh, in Kfar Roeh, Rav Neria of Yeshiva. In his room he has a picture of Rav Neria on the wall. And had a tremendous love of learning, tremendous devotion to learning. In the yeshiva in Merkaz Harav, he was known to have a tremendous shkita, tremendous hasmada, tremendous amount of learning. And he was the pillar of the family. His brother told me, he told Doron and Chochmot. With Doron, there's no calculating, there are no excuses. Before Pesach, he used to call every member of the family. Remember, he was the second youngest. Call all the members and make sure they had to come home for a Seder. He would talk to them. We were slaves, what it means to be a slave. He would tell his brothers about Yosef and about how Yosef interpreted dreams. His father doesn't speak Hebrew. His mother speaks a little bit. His father used to read stories of Chumash and Amharic. When he would come home, he would talk with his son. They would talk about the Parsha. Doron used to, the Ethiopian community in Ashdod is right next to the Ger Chassidim, the Melitzer Shtibel there. He used to spend 8 hours a Shabbos learning in the Gerer Shtibel, constantly learning. It was a tremendous intensity. It's a very, very poor family. They don't have anything. And Doron refused to take any financial help to help him learn. So he used to work multiple jobs in order to be able to continue to learn. He was in charge of the kitchen at Merkaz Harav. In addition, He used to spend 20 hours a week in the Merkaz Kutan in Maseret Zion, at the absorption center in the Maseret, working with Ethiopian children, teaching them about Torah, teaching them about the state. His brother told me for Doron, there was nothing as precious as Medinat Yisrael, as Yerushalayim, Shlemut Yerushalayim, Shlemut Haaretz. He wouldn't let anyone say anything negative about the state. He said, we can't give anything away, we can't give a part of Yerushalayim away. And he would encourage all the children in the absorption center to daven, to do mitzvot, and to learn 20 hours a week in the absorption center. And that still wasn't enough for him to make ends meet. So he used to work for one of the organizations that helps terror victims, and used to spend 4 hours a day studying with a victim of terror in the Beis Medrash, who now unfortunately has been victimized twice. He was a soldier in the army, served in the Lebanon War. His brother told me he didn't know what anger was. Doron lo yada mazakas, never got angry. He was an example within the community to the Gerer Chassidim, to the other Chassidim of what a Ben Torah was, an amazing absorption of learning. And on that difficult night, on that Thursday night, the Beis Medrash of the yeshiva was being set up for a Suuda, for Rosh Chodesh. He wanted to continue learning. He went into the library. He was learning the tour. He was about to take his test on Hilchos Malicha over the summer. And he was killed while learning. He fell into his open sefer, and he was buried with his tour that was stained with his blood. His father, when I saw him, was so depressed. He couldn't even open up. He couldn't lift his eyes. And the only thing he wanted me to know and to convey is how proud he was to have such a son. How proud he was to have such a special, special person in his family. The children from the absorption center, the Maseret Zion, made a book of letters to Doron after he passed. I was reading through the letters, and you can see the challenges that the Ethiopian community has in absorption. So many of the letters, unfortunately, were not written in correct Hebrew. The Hebrew was wrong, basic Hebrew. But the sentiments were very, very clear. And one sentiment that really struck me was a girl wrote, Doron, ani ohevet otcha, I love you. I promise Shani et Palel Kol Yom, that I will now daven every day Sheyavo Mashiach, so that Mashiach will come Ve'er Eot Chashuv, and I'll see you again. And she closed it with a heart that she drew with a crayon, a red heart. From Ashdod, we went up to Elkanah, and I visited the Roth family, Roi Roth, Olav HaShalom, Hashem Yukom Damo. The family was sitting, Shiva, his sister, was so distraught, she couldn't even open up she couldn't lift her head. She was just sitting there with her head between her knees, surrounded with her friends. Roi had an older brother, who was unfortunately wounded in the war in Lebanon 2 years ago. And the family was sitting Shiva with people from the community of Elkanah, as well as boys from Yeshiva and Merkaz Harav. And they had probably about 50 people being menachim. The Rav of Elkanah was sitting there, and they were very, very thankful that the whole world, the entire Jewish diaspora, is part of the experience. They mentioned to me that Rabbi Billet had been there the day before. They spoke about how much chizuk it gives them that other Jews are also participating in what they were experiencing. There was a microphone in the room, and they were passing around the microphone. Each person was speaking into the microphone. So there was an older gentleman who took the microphone and said that he wanted to share a thought that he had heard in the name of Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. Shmuel Zavsky, the Rosh Yeshiva Panovich, once said, we say the house of mourning, Hamakom Yenachem Etzchem. Literally, the Almighty will comfort you. Why do we say the Almighty will comfort you? Why don't we say, feel better, we hope you'll feel better, we're here for you? And Shmuel Zavsky answered that sometimes the pain is so great, there are no words of comfort. All we can say is we ask the Almighty that the Almighty should comfort you. He said, Ro'i had such a power of tefillah, such a power of prayer. In the shul, he wouldn't just pray. He used to make scandals for the Almighty, demanding that the Almighty help the Jewish people. Such a loss. Only the Almighty can give comfort. Only Hamakom Yenachem. Then they passed around the mic, and there was a boy, obviously an older boy in the yeshiva, who took it and said, everyone in the yeshiva knew Ro'i. Said, I'm older, but I used to learn from the way Ro'i davened, how he would dwell on the Shmona Esrei, how he would cry at times during davening. I learned from his joy, from his simcha. He once saw a boy in the dining room who was depressed or wasn't smiling. So he walked over to him. He grabbed his two lips. He forced them into a smile. He said, I want to see your teeth. He had a tremendous simchas hachaim, a love of life. And this boy said, I used to think Ro'i was a giant in tefillah, a giant in learning, a giant in prayer, but I didn't think he was such a giant in his learning. And then he started coming to the chaburos that I was giving, and many times he would understand the whole chaburah even before I would start saying it, as I was just developing the thought. So it was his Shana Aleph in the yeshiva. He had just come from Kfar Aroeh. He had such a love for the yeshiva. One of the eulogies was given by his Rebbe, who related how Ro'i was once spotted standing in the stairwell of the yeshiva, just standing there. Someone said to him, why are you standing here? He said, I just get so much pleasure seeing the steps of this yeshiva. I get so much pleasure to be present in this Makom Torah. His Rebbe said, it was all of the greatness of devotion to learning, love of learning. During lunch, he used to spend his time talking about the shiur, spending time learning with chavrusos while eating. The message that he took away from Ro'i was that Ro'i lived shivisi Hashem v'negi samen. He lived with Hashem in front of him. He learned with the awareness that Hashem was in front of him. Davened with the awareness that Hashem was in front of him. He had a joy, you know, a kind heart, always in the presence of Hashem. And then we went from Elkanah to Shivo, to the home of the Eldar family, which actually, it turns out, is just two houses away from my father's home in Shivo. In Yonatan, Eldar, I learned, had a tremendous love of learning. Everything he did to perfection. If he was learning how to build little cars, built it to perfection. Everything was with a sense of tremendous perfection. But especially learning. At the yeshiva, he developed a tremendous love for Daf Yomi. Learning Daf Yomi, he loved the Daf Yomi. And he ordered a special gemara with commentaries for the Daf Yomi. And it didn't arrive in time. His father said, you know, Yonatan loved to learn so much. He used to come home Friday morning and he was exhausted because he would stay up most of the night learning Mishmar. And sometimes he'd come home and he would be very tired. He'd fall asleep and his brothers would say to him, are you tired because you spent all night learning Mishmar? He'd say, no, I'm tired because I didn't learn Mishmar. If I would have learned Mishmar, I wouldn't have been tired. He had such a busy day in learning that his older brother was learning America's Harav, and his older brother offered to learn with him b'chavrusa. The only time he had was at 6:30. 6:30 in the morning, a half hour before Shabbos. The rest was already all scheduled. And he had a love for halacha l'maisa. He used to spend hours learning the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Mordechai Eliyahu, and he would write down in a little notebook all the halachos that he didn't know that he saw in this Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And he carried that notebook in his pocket. He would always review it. Constant shinun, constant review of halacha. The boys in the high school didn't know halacha. They'd say, go to Eldar. Eldar knows. And he had a love for the Daf Yomi. Yeshiva Tzirim was learning Gittin this year. Gittin wasn't the Masechta he was so attracted to. Not so practical. But he was very into the Daf Yomi. And when this Gemara finally arrived, it arrived a couple of weeks late. So he ended up being 16 blocks behind in the Daf Yomi. And over the last few months, he's been stealing time and staying late, learning. Wednesday night, he was the last boy in the Beis Medrash of Yeshiva Letzirim. One of the Rabbanim in Kiryat Moshe came in and related the story at the Shiloh. He saw this boy sitting and learning. This Rav was tired. He had to stand to stay awake. And Yonatan was sitting and learning devotion, learning till 1:45 in the morning. That night was when he had caught up to the Daf Yomi. And the next day, on Thursday, as he was coming out of the stairwell, he was killed on Kiddush Hashem with his Daf Yomi Gemara in his hand, with his notebook in his pocket, both of which were buried with him. As his Rosh Yeshiva said, there's now a new meaning to the phrase that our sages say, Ashrei mi shebalakan v'talmudo biyado. Praiseworthy is the one who comes here with his Talmud in his hand. We usually translate it as referring to the Yom HaDin HaGadol, the day of great judgment, that a person should have the privilege of remembering his learning. But there's another meaning now. Praiseworthy is the one who comes to his burial place, not to the Yom HaDin HaGadol, with his Talmud, with his Gemara in his hand, because he was killed holding his Gemara. His Gemara was stained with his blood and had to be buried with him. When I was at the Shiva home, the mayor of Yerushalayim, Uri Lupiansky, was there. And when he was there, a relative of Mr. Eldar came, a cousin, also from Yerushalayim. He was so happy to see her. She clearly wasn't observant. He said to everyone sitting there, this is my cousin. She lost her son also for the sake of our nation and our land and our state. He said there are three first cousins who have now given their lives either in war or in the army or in a terror attack. And while he introduced his cousin to Uri Lupiansky, the mayor was trying to comfort them, tell them how the mayor of Paris called, Mike Bloomberg called, the whole world was shaken by what happened. And Mr. Eldar turned to me and said, I want to know, you're the mayor of Yerushalayim. Are you making sure that in all the non-religious schools, in all the Mamlachti schools, they teach about Yerushalayim? They teach about Torah. They teach about our heritage. You have the power to do it. And he said to him, absolutely. We teach about the history of Yerushalayim, which is really learning Tanakh, and learning Emunah, and learning about connection to Klal Yisrael. And when I was there, Rav Uri Cohen, who's the head of the Meretz Kollel in the Maseret, Yonatan's father learned for several years, was there, he said, Rabbi Reichman, tell the Jews in America that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael are not broken. Families that suffered tremendous losses are not shattered. They're trying to build. Look, they're trying to build. To make sure, to fix, to add, to bring more holiness to the country, to the society. We went from Shiloh to Kohava Shachar, to the family of Yonadav Hirschfeld. Nadav Hirschfeld was known as the Tfilin Shel Rosh of Machzor Mem of Yeshiva Letzirim, the glory of the 40th graduating class of Yeshiva Letzirim. When I was there, I got to speak with his grandfather, Rabbi Bat Shlita, who actually is an alumnus of Yeshiva University, got smicha in 1958. He was telling me about his grandson. He said, my grandson, everyone is going to talk about his bekiyus. He finished all of Shas Mishnayos 70 times. He used to learn 18 prakim of Mishnayos a day. He knew every single Mishnah and Shas by heart. He was 19, but 18 actually. First year in Yeshiva America's Rav. But as much as he had this tremendous bekiyus, this tremendous amount of learning that he knew and he was reviewing constantly, he was an Oker Haran. He was a tremendous Lamdan. He was extremely deep in his analysis and his learning. He used to come to our home once a week. We used to learn together. He had such a deep understanding of the sugya. And he was a tremendous Baal Chesed, tremendous kindness. He had a great-grandmother who's still alive, Revitzin Shapiro. He used to go to her home every week and play the flute to give her joy, to give her simcha. He had a tremendous simcha. It turns out that from the testimonies of the survivors, the Nadav was shot in the back, and the bullet penetrated close to the heart, and apparently he saw a copy of Shev Shmaitza that had fallen from one of the tables in the library. Even though he was shot, he bent over to pick up this Shev Shmaitza, and that's where he died. So they said there that it was an appropriate way. He was a boy with such simcha that if the Mechabel Yimach Shmo would have seen that face, it wouldn't have been possible to shoot at such a face. Such a deep level of learning, and such a love for the depth of learning, that his last act, with his last energy, was to pick up a Shev Shmaitza, that it shouldn't be desecrated, that it should be on a table. His grandfather said to me, when I said to him, he should be Zocha to have Nechama, he said, I don't know. I just can't accept. It's a high shufra. Such an amazing neshama, such an amazing Talmud Chacham who was so young. The Bala Ba'ara unfortunately won't continue to learn with me. Give us that joy. We went from Kohava Shachar to the Ira Atika, to the Old City. I went to the Shiva home of the Lishit family where Rav Tovia Lishit was sitting Shiva. For his son Yochai. And to say that there was strength, to say that there was emuna, is an understatement. It was unreal. Rav Lishitz was sitting there and he was sharing stories about his son, about the sensitivity of his son, the love of Torah that his son had. When his son was 12 years old, he enrolled himself in Daf Yomi. They were learning Chulin. He started to go to the Daf Yomi Shir in Beit Knesset HaRamban in the Rova, and he learned all of the Daf Yomi from Chulin all the way through to the end of Moed. When he got up to Yevamos, to Seder Nashim, he came to his father and mother and said, I want to ask your permission. What? I want to ask your permission to stop learning Daf Yomi. His father said, Yochai, did I ever sign a contract with you? Did I ever ask you to learn Daf Yomi? You chose to learn Daf Yomi. He said, no, I know it gives you joy that I'm learning Daf Yomi. It might give you a certain amount of heartache if you hear that I stopped it. So I want to ask your permission before I stop. He said his son had such a devotion to learning and to maximizing the amount of time and learning more and more and more. And many times when you find people who are tremendously immersed in learning, there's a lot of pressure that they're putting on themselves. Everything was with a smile, with joy, without a sense of pressure, with a simchat hachayim. He said, but there was such an insistence on time. He said he learned that from Rav Nevensal. Rav Victor Nevensal was very, very close with the family. And Rav Nevensal was a Yaki with such a devotion to time. He was once walking to davening and he was hit by a car. And he got up, he said, "Thank God, I'll still get to davening early." And that made a tremendous impression on Yochai. For him to come late to tefillah would be to come after, if it wasn't 15 minutes early, it was late. He was at every tefillah 15 minutes early. Every tefillah. There was a boy in the high school who didn't wake up for davening. So he asked Yochai to help him out. So Yochai tried to wake him up. He still didn't wake up. So Yochai said, "Kol ha'emtzayim k'sherim, all means are appropriate." He said, "Yeah, all means are appropriate." So the next morning, 20 minutes before davening, he walked into this boy's room. He carried him as if he was carrying a wounded soldier on a stretcher, dropped him down in the middle of the hallway, went down to davening, and that morning the boy made it to davening. When I was there, Rav Amital came to be Menachem Avo. Rav Amital today is an older man, and Rav Lishitz was very moved that he came. And he said to Rav Amital, he said, "We had great children. Unbelievable neshama, unbelievable soul." He said that Rav Nevensal had come and just cried. And he held his hand and he said, "I have no words of consolation. I came to cry with you." I said, "All of Klal Yisrael is crying." And as Rav Amital was sitting there, he said, "Rav Amital, now I realize 30th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War, Rav Amital spoke at Har Herzl. And he began his remarks by saying, 'Morai v'rabotai,' my teachers and masters." He said, "I'm not saying 'Morai v'rabotai' to the people standing here. I'm saying it to all the people buried here. All the soldiers who gave their lives, who are buried in Har Herzl, are our teachers and masters about Kiddush Hashem, about Avas Yisrael, about Klal Yisrael." Rav Lishitz said, "Now my son is Mori Rabbi, is my teacher and master. He is my teacher. Rav Hadari is a teacher of mine, Rav Nevensal of Katz, but also my son, Yochai Lishitz, Hashem Yikom Dama." Rav Katz, when he spoke about the Lishitz family on Thursday night, had a story that is, it's so hard to relate it because it's so beyond where we are. He mentioned that it says in the Torah, "Yadata hayom v'ashevosa l'olavecha ki Hashem u'elokim ein od novado." Know today, take it to heart, bring it to your heart, that there is one God, there's none other. But we know that there's one God. We say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But then we live our lives and we don't seem to live it knowing that there's one God. We blame people for this and for that. There's one God. Hashem is in charge of everything. He said, the Kutzker Rebbe says, sometimes the distance between the Yadata Hayom, between the mind, and V'Hashevosa Olavecha, and taking it to heart, is greater than the distance between heaven and earth. But Rav Lishitz, he has internalized Yadata Yom Hashavot Olavecha. Thursday night, when they heard the news of the attack, Rav Katz and his wife ran over to the old city, and they ran to the Lishitz home. And Rav Lishitz and his wife had gone to all the hospitals looking for their son. He wasn't there. Nobody had a list for him. He was sitting at home waiting. Katz was there in the room with them. And Rav Lishitz was saying a bracha of Asher Yatzar, saying a bracha with such concentration, so slowly, every word. "The Almighty is Masvila Asos." Rav Katz got upset. He said, "You're an Onim. You can't make the bracha." And his wife said to him, "He's not an Onim. They don't know yet." A couple of minutes later, they got the call that there had been an identification. Yochai was no longer amongst the living. And immediately, Rav Lipschitz, Tor Kriya, said, Bracha, Baruch Dayna Emes. And he said to Rav Katz, what unbelievable children we had. What an unbelievable boy. What an unbelievable neshama Yochai was. So sensitive, so happy, such a love of learning, such a desire to become a gadol b'Yisrael. And there was a younger brother in the room, a 10-year-old boy. He realized what had happened. He started crying. And the Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Sophia, started stroking her son. She told him, it's okay. You can cry. You can cry. After a couple of minutes of crying, she then turned to him. And with such strength, she said, Yochai was a soul and a body. The body is just the coat. It's just the external garment. What did they do? They ripped his coat. But his neshama, they can't touch. His neshama is still here with us in this room. Yochai sees you right now. He doesn't want you to cry. If you want Yochai to smile, take out a Mishnah. Learn a Mishnah with your brother. That's what will make him. We all know that there's a neshama, there's a guf. But to live it in such terrible moments, and to feel it, and to be able to say that? I said on Matzai Shabbos, a reporter from the radio called the Lipschitz home and asked to interview Rebbetzin Lipschitz. I spoke to her. She told him about her son, how her son used to do all the shopping without even telling them, and only when he went away to yeshiva, they realized that they were missing things and they had to do the shopping, and how he was so warm and filled with such joy and love of Torah and learning. And the reporter said, doesn't it bother you? Where was God on Thursday night? Eifu hayah ha'elokim? And Rebbetzin Lipschitz said, ha'elokim hayah basifriya shel yeshivat merkaz harav. God was in the library of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav on Thursday night. The master of the garden went into the garden to pick his roses. That's what a mother says when she loses her 17-year-old son 2.5 months away before his 18th birthday. The level of faith, of belief, it's an ormakis, it's an unbelievable level. When Rav Lipschitz eulogized the Kedoshim, he pointed out that we say, Echad b'nei ha'chabura shenes yidagu kol b'nei ha'chabura. If one of the members of the group passes, all the members of the group have to be worried. He said, he doesn't think that everyone has to be worried that they're next. It means that we all have to feel responsible to take on one element of that tzaddik who passed away. And he said, he promised that he would come 15 minutes early to davening because of his Rebbe, his son, Yochai. We then went to the home of Neliyah Cohen, Olav HaShalom, Hashem Yikom Damo, whose father had lived for the last 24 years. He grew up in the Arab quarter, in the Muslim quarter of the Ir Atika. His father spoke about what an unbelievable son he had, how his son had a tremendous, tremendous love of learning, always learning, constantly learning, a love of halacha with a tremendous sensitivity and bravery. He used to walk out of his home adorned with talis and tefillin at age 13, and walk through the Muslim quarter, walk through the shuk, to go daven at the Kotel every morning, without any fear. And he had a love of learning. He had been Messiah Seches Gittin, and he asked his father what he should learn next. He was in ninth grade. Father said, now learn it all b'iyun. So he went through the entire tractate with every sheet in the Rishonim, summarizing it. And then he was learning brachos. He was in the Messiah brachos b'kiyus. He was in the middle of learning brachos b'iyun. Father said, tell people what an unbelievable treasure I had. Someone in the old city came to him and said, when I used to see your son davening at the Kotel, I would say, this boy is going to be the Kohen Gadol when the Beis HaMikdash is built. So his father of Kohen said, Kohen Gadol's highest avoda, that he walks with Naiv Lefnim inside in the Kodesh HaKadashim. He sprinkles blood, Bein Abadim, Echad Lamal and the Sheva Lamata, one above and seven below. Said, my son, instead of becoming the Kohen Gadol, he became the carbon of the Kohen Gadol. The Almighty went into the Kodesh HaKadashim, and he took eight matanos, eight neshamos, eight karbanos, Echad Lamal and the Sheva Lamata. He said, it's not by chance that the terrorist came into Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav. Maybe he knew, maybe he didn't know what it was. But it was an attack against what the yeshiva represents, the approach of Rav Kook. And so Rav Cohen said, we need to learn from these great Kedoshim to continue the approach of Rav Kook, to love the land of Israel without any conditions, no matter what's going on in the land of Israel. To love every Jew without any conditions, no matter what's happening, no matter what he's doing. And to love the Torah without any conditions. To look for every hiddur, for every chumrah, for every level of growth, only when it's achas lamala, when we are above, at least once, can we bring blessings down, sheva lamata, seven times. Then went to Neve Daniel, to the home of Rabbi Avichayil, who was sitting Shiva for Segev Avichayil. He related how his son had a tremendous love for Kedusha, for holiness. As a young boy, he said to his father, why did you name me Segev? Why didn't you name me Avraham Avinu? He wanted to be Avraham Avinu. He taught himself Masechet Midot, and he built a model of the Beis HaMikdash and a model of the Mishkan. And he used to summarize the classes that he would hear in Yeshivat Tzirin. And he would go back every week to learn with his father and summarize the classes that he learned with his father. His father read at the Shiva from those summaries. And in one of those summaries, his son wrote, Moshe Rabbeinu was so special because he gave up everything for Klal Yisrael. Moshe gave up everything for the Jewish people. And his son, his father said, that was his dream, to be Moshe Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. And that's what he did. The last Shiva that we went to was the Shiva for Avraham David Moses, whose father is American, his mother is American. His mother is a Gioras. Parents are divorced, father remarried, his mother remarried. His father related that his son had such an unbelievable love of Torah. He was 16 years old. Wednesday, the day before the attack, the yeshiva went on a trip. And the son didn't want to go. I don't want to go on the trip. I'd rather sit and learn. So one of his rebbeim said, no, you have to come on the tziyu. We learn together b'chavusa. Come with me on the tziyul, I'll learn with you. They learned Masechta Megillah together on the tziyul. And he had a tremendous, tremendous love. His father said, he saw him once mouthing some words. He said to him, what are you doing? He said, now I have Seder Tarot. He memorized the entire Seder Moed, the entire Mishnah of the Seder Tarot. And his father thinks he knew all of Seder Kadoshim by heart as well. He used to come into class without a Gemara. And when asked why, he would say, I memorized it before class, I memorized the Rashis, I memorized all the Tosafot. His only joy was learning, tremendously intense. He actually had wanted to drop out of the secular studies. He had spent several hours with the principal trying to negotiate his way to just sit and learn in the yeshiva. And with this tremendous, tremendous love of learning was also unbelievable midos. When his father would come into the room, he would stand up full the whole way. His father knew that his love was learning. So they agreed that on Shabbos, when he'd come home from the yeshiva, they would learn. His father used to go to the early minyan. His father would take a nap, and inevitably he would sleep. He wouldn't be woken up. So he'd say to his son, Avraham David, why didn't you wake me up? His son would say, I did. How'd you wake me up? I said, it's time to come learn. And he went back to sleep. Because for him to be told it's time to come learn, that would be it. He would jump out of the bed. He used to daven Vasikin every morning. But it would bother the roommates that he was waking up so early. So he used to sleep outside on the grass of the yeshiva and wake up early to go for Vasikin every morning. The 16-year-old boy was learning with his Chavrusa Segev, Maseches Megillah. They were learning the sugya of the Ein Bein when the terrorist came in, started shooting. One of the boys who was there at the shiva said that he remembers hearing people shout, Moses, get up! Moses, get up! So immersed in his learning. Apparently, even when there were shots ringing out, he didn't get up right away. His father said that he named his son Avraham David Moses because the Rashi Tevot spell out the word Adam, person. He said the Gemara speaks about people who look like people, but are really not Adam. Am Adom Elachamor. And those people that are not Adam attacked his Adam. But all they could do was affect the Dalet in the Mem, the Dam, spill his blood. But the Aleph, his Neshama, that they couldn't touch. And all the stories that everyone heard about him over the week of the Shiva, those are stories that are writing the Sefer Torah. With the gvilin, there are no gvilin, but it's a sefer Torah shel eish, a sefer Torah of fire. He said that the last thing he learned with his son on Shabbos, they had studied some Zohar, where the Zohar said that when the Kohen Gadol would be maktir the Ketores, there would be a pillar of smoke that would rise, and in the smoke, the Kohen Gadol could see the letters of the name of Hashem. There's a tremendous smoke here that I can't see the hand of Hashem. But those letters of my son's life are the letters of the name of Hashem shining through that smoke, through that carbon that was offered with Nihilus name. And then Avram David's stepfather spoke, Rav David Moriya. He used to come learn with his stepson once a week. Spoke about the unbelievable humanity of his stepson. And he made the following point. He was a stepfather. The attack occurred on Thursday night. Friday morning was Rosh Chodesh. You have to say hello. He's not an Avel, he's not an Omen. He had to say hello. So how was I going to say hello after such a loss? And I remember a Hasidic story. Someone comes to the Rebbe, he's going through a very hard time. He says, Rebbe, how can I say Hallel? How can I say Zeh Yom Asa Hashem when I'm going through such tremendous difficulties? And the Rebbe said, have a lot of intention when you say Ana Hashem, please God. And that'll be a skula to enable you to say the rest of the Hallel. The Chassid walks out and he remembers, there are two Ana Hashem, Ana Hashem Oshiyana, Ana Hashem Atzlichana, please God, save me, please God, help me. So he runs back, says, Rebbe, which Ana Hashem was I supposed to have intention in? And the Rebbe says, not Ana Hashem Oshiyana, not Ana Hashem Atzlichana, Ana Hashem Ki Ani Abdah. He said, that's how I said Hala. I said, Ana Hashem Ki Ani Abdah. I don't understand, but Hashem, I'm your Abed. With Kavana Ana Hashem. You related a story, which again is it's Sipure Tzadikim, but it's someone who actualized it. He said on Thursday night, they ran to Shaare Tzedek Hospital. Their son wasn't there. They ran to Hadassah. They didn't have their son there either. They were distraught. that there is another boy here who was shot in the chest, bullet wounds, in very, very difficult straits, who's under surgery. So Rabbi Moriah said to her, "What did he look like?" She said, "He had blonde hair." He turned to his wife, Rivka, and said, "I'm sure that's our son, Avraham David." They ran up to the operating room, and there was another family there, the family of Shimon ben Zin. He said to the room of boys at the yeshiva, "I promise you, I was happy. I was happy for the ben Zin family that at least they had hope. I was shocked that he was attacked. He actually had been a student of mine in Cholet, but I was happy for him, for them, that he had hope. And as for me, my wife, we accepted the judgment. We went to the forensic center, and when my wife had to identify her son, the last time she saw her son, she said, 'Thank you. Thank you for all the Torah. Thank you for all the chesed. There's no way I could ever say thank you enough to Hashem for who you were.'" He said, in Hallel, there are prakim that we skip on Rosh Chodesh, and there are prakim that we say. He said, the Ben Zin family has to say those prakim that are usually skipped. Ahavti ki yishma Hashem kolita hanunai. I'm so fortunate that Hashem hears my supplications. Ki afafuni chevle mabes. I was surrounded by the chains of death. Can we think of the chains of death that were in that library as the shots rang out, as the blood spilled? Chevle mabes of those 40 boys. And yet a boy miraculously survives. He has to say, ahavti ki yishma Hashem. He said, and we say, ma'ashiv la'ashem kol tagmulohi. How could I ever thank you, Hashem, for all of your chassadim, for such an amazing boy? He said, when we sat Shiva in Efrat, there was a boy who came in. We didn't know who he was. He tried to be Menachem. He came in again, and he came in again, and he came in again. And he didn't look like a boy who was makbid on Kala Kilchamura. At the end of the Shiva, he said to us, "I want you to know that every story cut me in my heart. My davening's never going to be the same. My learning's never going to be the same. My Shabbos is never going to be the same. I'm going to learn from Avraham David." We say, Yakar be'enei Hashem, hamav talachasidav. Precious in the eyes of Hashem is the death of His pious ones, because of all that we learn from them, all that we have to grow from. We say, L'cha Hashem ezbach zebach toda. To you, Hashem, I'll offer a sacrifice of thanks. U'v'shem Hashem ekra. And in the name of Hashem, I will call. And then, and this for me personally was the most searing rendition of Hallel I ever experienced. He asked everyone in the room to join him in singing Ma'ashiv la'Hashem. And picture this scene, 300 high school boys who just lost 5 friends and a 6th who was with them, who had just graduated, and they're all singing Ma'ashiv la'Hashem kol tagmulohi alai. Oh, Yeshua Sessa, Uvishem Hashem Ekra, Mashiv Lashem, Kol Tagmulohi Alai, Kos Yeshua Sessa. Uvishem Hashem Ekra. Hashem, Hamav Salachasidav, Ayonav Hashem, Ki Ani Yavdecha, Ani Abdecha Ben Amosecha, Ani Abdecha younger. And he said, I'm 3 years younger. But Rui always spoke to me and had time for me, and I was going through a hard time in my family. And I had to come because I had to return something to you. The reason why I wanted to spend time with Rui, because Ratziti lehitchazek, I wanted to get stronger. And Rui gave me these two books. They're in English too. One is called The Gentle Weapon. The other is called The Empty Chair. One is about Sila, the other is about Simcha. And he gave me these books, and I came to say, and now he started crying, that now that Rogi left this world, Rogi succeeded. He gave the books back to his father. The father started crying. The mother started crying. And the father said, my son never wrote a will. Books were my son's will. My son's will was that you should get stronger. That's the will of all these kedoshim. The principal, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Le'Tzirim, ended the Hesvedim with an apology. He said that this year he's been meeting with all the ninth graders. And he didn't get a chance to meet with Neriah because when it was Neriah's turn, Neriah was sick. He wanted to apologize to Neriah that he didn't meet with him. He didn't get to know him. He didn't interview him. And then he started crying. He said, I hope that after 120, when I get to the world of truth, Neriah will allow me to sit at his feet and Neriah will interview me. Matai yagiu ma'asai, he said. Ma'asai talmidai. When we are going to chitzasam shol kedoshim, hear Sipure Tzadikim, when we hear Mas and Merkava, we are enveloped with an Or Makif, with a surrounding light. And the challenge for us is to try to imbibe of this light, to take of this light, and to live in this way with the love of Torah, the love of Chesed, with Simcha, with Kedusha, to be Makadish, to sanctify what happened on that Thursday.
Thank Rabbi Glickman for his profound insights and Rabbi Reichman for his powerful, unforgettable vignettes of the lives of these holy souls, each one of them an olam mole, the world, the complete world, to himself. Each one of them a world destroyed to their families and to Klal Yisrael. So what do we take from the event? Certainly the words of inspiration, Rabbi Glickman and Rabbi Reichman, about what it means to be a masmid in Torah, of what it means to be serious in tefillah, of what it means to be a cultivator of midos. That's one important aspect. If eight precious souls are missing now from Klal Yisrael, and the rest of us have to somehow take up the slack. And we have to rebuild those worlds as well in the way that Torah Jews know best. Our enemies destroy. Our enemies blow things up. They're experts at that. They're adept at taking lives and snuffing out goodness. So we have to be adept at building, at growing, at nurturing lives, at adding holiness, building holiness in our world. There's a project that our community has undertaken at the request of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav. This Shabbos, we in this side of Teaneck will be visited by Rav Grosser, one of the Ramim at Merkaz HaRav, to speak about the events. He was an eyewitness to the events, and to speak about the assistance, the opportunity that all of us have to share in the reconstruction and the development of Merkaz HaRav. They have decided to build 8 new classrooms, each in memory of one of the souls lost. And our community has decided to adopt each shul together one of those classrooms. The hope is that each community, large community in America, will adopt one classroom. We have decided to embrace that project. Checks can be made payable to American Friends of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav and submitted to the Rav of each shul, brought even to B'nai Yeshur into our office, and they'll be submitted to the yeshiva. And we'll have a share, not only in memorializing these cherished individuals, but we'll have a share in the Torah that's learned there. Le'ilu nishmasam, lizchusam, and really as a source of chizuk and inspiration for all of Klal Yisrael forevermore. If I could ask everyone to rise, call upon my colleague Rabbi Baum to please come forward and recite the Kel Moli Rachamim.
Rachamim Shochein Bamarimim Hamsei Menucha Nechona Al Kanzvei Hashchina V'malos Kedoshim V'tahorim Kizoha Harakia Masirim Es Nishmos HaKadosh Doron Ben Makonet Mahata Hashem Yikom Domo HaKadosh Yonadav Chaim Ben Tzemach Yudha Hirschfeld Hashem Yikom Domo HaKadosh Roi Aaron Ben Yaakov Rot Hashem Yikom Domo HaKadosh Segev Pniel Ben Eliyoshiv Abichayel Hashem Yikom Domo HaKadosh Yonatan Yisrok Ben Drosh Shmuel Eldar Hashem Yikom Domo הקדוש נריה בן יצחק כהן השם יקום דמו, הקדוש אברהם דוד בן נפתלי מוזס השם יקום דמו, הקדוש יוחאי בן צוביה ליפשיץ השם יקום דמו, שהלכו לעולמם. ואבו שבלי נדר ניתן צדקה בן הזכרת נשמותיהם בגן עדן זה מנוחתם, לכן בעלו רחמים יסתירים בסייצר כנופור לעולמים ויסור בתור החיימס נשמותיהם עד אינו נחלוסום וינוחו בשלום על משכבותיהם ונאמר אמן. אל מול הרחמים שכן והמרוימים המצא מנוחו נכון נעול כאן והשכינו ומעלו את קדושים מתאורים כזור כי הם מזהירים את נשמות הקדושים והטהורים שהומסו ושנהרגו ושנשחצו ושנסופו ושנטבו ושנחנקו על קידוש השם. באבו שבלי נדן ניתן צדוק לבד הסקורת נשמותיהם וגן עדן תהם מנוחו סום, לכן בעל הרחמים יסירם בצי תקנוף אב לעולמים ויצור בתור החיימס נשמותיהם אדוני הוא נחלו סום וינוחו ושלום על משכבותיהם ונאמר אמן.
Those who haven't gotten Meyer yet, there'll be a minion